War. Originally called Eric Burden in War, is a funk fusion band from Long Beach, California. They are known for several hit songs including Spill the Wine, The World is a Ghetto, The Cisco Kid, Why Can't We Be Friends, and Low Rider. Formed in 1969, War is a musical crossover band that fuses elements of rock, funk, jazz, Latin, rhythm and blues, and reggae. Their album, The World is a Ghetto, was Billboard's best-selling album of 1973. The band transcended racial and cultural barriers with a multi-ethnic lineup. Lonnie Jordan is the only remaining original member of the current lineup, and they are still very active and on tour. I had the pleasure of a one-on-one conversation with Lonnie, and here's what took place.
Jordan, how are you?
Lonnie, how are you?
I'm good. Can't complain.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling. I sure appreciate it.
No problem.
You know, I've appreciated your music for so long. I was just sitting here thinking about how the first War record I ever heard and where was I? And I'm telling you, man, this music has just, it really has brought a lot to my life. It really has.
Well, that's great, man. It's an honor for me to hear you say that because a lot of people know the music, but they don't connect the music with the name War. If you say War, first thing they say, what is it good for? Then, okay.
Exactly. No, there's a couple of your songs that specifically take me right back to that very time and that very space that I was when I first heard that song, one of them being All Day Music and the other one being Deliver the Word. It takes me right back to that time, Lonnie.
Oh, that's great, man. That would be your soundtrack back then.
Exactly.
Soundtrack to your story, man.
My first question would be, from the very start, War has always presented a wide variety of musical styles. Now, was that intentional?
No, it wasn't. It's just it all came from, well, from the streets. I've always pretty much labeled our music as universal street music. And when I say universal, that means that all walks of life can understand our music. It's that simple. Body language, you know, body language music, which is becomes a groove, and along with messages that's really not that heavy in the messages because it doesn't take you to the White House. We don't try to get into political lyrics. We keep it simple with grooves.
Right.
Pretty much like troubadours. We just make you aware of your surroundings. That's what we did.
I understand. Now, War started back in 1969 and was founded on good music, peace, love, and brotherhood. It's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
Oh, tell me about it. Well, that's leading up to a book that I am still working on, and hopefully I'll have something out by next year. So, but that journey, I think I can pretty much specify the journey in more details in the book. Uh-huh. And I think that will answer a lot of curious questions, and it'll also talk about my journey with the band, with Eric Burden, and then our association with Jimi Hendrix and other entertainers during our time that back in the day when radio was definitely black and white.
Right.
You know, you had R&B stations and you had pop stations. And then it became rock and roll with the pop and R&B with hip hop and on labels. But we had no labels.
Right.
So people didn't know how to go into a Tower record store and say, okay, let me find War under R&B. And then if it's not there, then you had to go ask someone, where would I find it? Oh, you may find it under jazz. You may find it under Latin. You may find it under reggae. You may, you know, it was... That was your label. That's why we never won any awards. No one knew how to label us to accept it or get any awards. But we've been blessed to work to this very day we've never had an issue playing because we could play all venues. That's where we've been blessed.
Right, so, right.
That's we can do rock venues. We can do the romance rock venues. We can do Latin venues, reggae fest. We can jazz fest, smooth jazz, fest, name it. We could do it all.
Uh-huh. Now, the original members have formed the Lowrider Band. Is there any possibility, Lonnie, of a WAR reunion?
Well, that's pretty much, for me, that is the famous thing that, is there any chance of me getting back with my ex-wife? You know, making beautiful babies is just like me and the guys making beautiful, you know, music, which is our babies.
Right.
You know? But the music has grown old, and so has the kids. All I can say is that, you know, obviously for ex and ex-brothers, you know, that we made music where we did have a great relationship. That's why we made beautiful music. But then the time comes and everyone has, difference of opinions.
Right.
It causes detours with everyone. Now, an ex-wife is one thing, but when you're dealing with multi amount of personalities in a group, that's exes.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Believe me, I know what you mean.
It's called exit from exes. But I still love my brothers. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here.
Right.
And vice versa. But together,
right,
we all have to realize if it wasn't for our Rock and Roll Hall of Fans, none of us would be here.
I understand. I understand totally. Now,
some of us lost that contact, and that's the issue that I have on that note also. And I still love my fans under any circumstances, and I have to be there for them.
Now, what would you say was the most pinnacle moment for WAR? Well, what was the highest peak that you guys reached, do you feel?
The highest peak?
The pinnacle moment.
Shoot, be honest with you, man. When I was like 18 and 19 years old, when we were with Eric Burdon.
Wow.
That was the highest, and it just seemed like every day was a high point of my life. Not to mention being high.
I understand.
Reaching the high and being high, I didn't know how to separate them. So I was. It was always a high point in my life because one of the main things that that I realized as I got older was the fact that that Eric pointed out to me when I was young. He said, "These people that you're meeting through me," which was like Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Mick Jagger, a lot of the American act, a lot of the American entertainers. I didn't know who they were,
right?
But I did know the British Invasion. I knew who Eric was from the Animals. I knew who the Beatles were, the Stones. You know, I knew David Bowie, but I didn't really know Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison,
right,
and all the American. I mean, I knew the Everly Brothers, and I knew the Righteous Brothers, and Elvis Presley, but that was about it, you know, as far as the pop world, and then what they started calling the rock world. We were pretty much secluded in our own world with our own sound, our own everything, man. We just
right.
From the streets that we knew to the studios.
Yes.
So my high was every day.
Wow. Wow, that's wonderful. Hey, what was it like working with Eric Burdon anyway? What was it like working with Eric?
Eric was beautiful. Eric was a teacher, man. Eric, eventually, when he left the Animals and other groups that he worked with, he really wanted to become more of a musician and not a front man, but that just wasn't going to happen, not with his old fans.
Right, you know? Right.
So we pretty much endured that with him, but eventually, as we started spinning off from Eric, you know, I think his fan base started realizing that, hey, that group, wow, I'm liking them now. But I have to say that Eric taught me how to pretty much entertain in front of the people in a way that we were basically making a, I would say, soundtrack movie or a movie soundtrack with Eric, because we were improvising our music all the time. Just, and we would go into the studio and do the same thing. We would improvise, and that's basically how we created music, and that's why it became so different than most of the music that was out there.
A mixed salad bowl.
That's what that is.
Right.
That's what we were making and didn't know it. Gumbo. We didn't know it.
Now, I understand that your first charting hit was Spill the Wine, and it was inspired by you spilling a bottle of wine in the mixing board. What? What?
Well, it wasn't a whole bottle. It was when I poured the wine, a big fifth, a Gallo. I poured it in a cup, a styrofoam, and I'm watching Eric, you know, in an isolated booth. We were trying to come up, we already had the track done, but we were trying to come up with the song at that point, lyrics and stuff, you know, and we didn't have nothing to come up with. So Eric was, had this young lady with him in the isolated, vocal booth, and it wasn't that big. So, it was kind of dark. We were, Eric was recording, but it was the girl who was doing the Spanish part. That's basically what she was doing, and he was trying to ad-lib with her.
Right.
And, of course, we kept all the Spanish part that she was singing. Her name was Carmen. So we edited it down into the song when we finally came up with the song. But I was watching Eric. He was ad-libbing. I was pouring the glass of wine. And I'm saying, okay. I poured it, and all of a sudden, I looked at, oh, man, it spilled all over the board, and the board started frying. Oh, yes, it did. It fried out, and everybody just thought it was funny. See, I wasn't high. I was getting ready to get tipsy on some booze.
Right.
So to them, they were all busting out laughing because they knew that I, you know, here I am. I'm still young and dumb and full of fun, you know.
Right, right.
And I never saw that before with Eric. I said, oh, this is a new world we're about to get into. That must be, you know, so that's what happened. I got all excited, and the wine just spilled in the glass, the styrofoam cup, all into the board. That was dumb of me to even pour it right next to the board anyway. But I did, and it, we ended up with a theme. I mean, a big light bulb lit up, and Eric said, spill the wine. And then Jerry, the producer, Chris Huston, the engineer, everybody said, bingo, spill the wine.
Wow.
So we had to end up going next door to the other rooms in order to continue recording. But we did have a bill for $25,000.
Wow.
That's what those boards cost back then. So what we did was we figured we'll get it from the record label.
Uh-huh.
So we paid the bill and more because then we had a hit.
Yep, you had a hit with your first hit record.
Summer's day, when I thought I'd lay myself down to rest in a big field of tall grass. I lay there in the sun and felt it caressing my face as I fell asleep and dreamed. I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, that I was the star of the movie. This really blew my mind, the fact that me, an overfed, long-haired, leaping gnome, should be the star of a Hollywood movie. But there I was. I was taken to a place, the Hall of the Mountain King. I stood high upon a mountaintop, naked every kind of girl. There was long ones, tall ones, short ones, brown ones, black ones, round ones, big ones, crazy ones. Out of the middle came a lady. She whispered in my ear something crazy. She said, what could that mean? Am I going crazy? Or is this just a dream? Now wait a minute, I know I'm lying in a field of grass somewhere. So it's all in my head. And then I heard her say one more time. Hot flames of fire roaring at my back. As she disappeared, but soon she returned. In her hand was a bottle of wine, in the other a glass. She poured some of the wine from the bottle into the glass, raised it to her lips, and just before she drank it, she said, take the wine, take that girl, spill the wine, take that girl, spill the wine, take that girl, spill the wine, take that girl, take that girl, yeah, it's all yours.
Now, you know, yeah. War has performed with Jimi Hendrix, and in January 1970, it turned out to be his last public performance. He passed away the very next day. Now, I'm sure that was a shock.
Yeah, it was, because we had seen him, you know, periodically before that. And you know, of course, he was a good friend of Eric's because of through Chas Chandler of the Animals, who produced his first album, you know. So it was a Jimi Hendrix and the Animals connection, you know, and he and Eric became very, very, very good friends. And Jimmy was very supportive of Eric's new band. And come to find out that Jimmy, we had crossed paths before, you know, like through Washington, through the through hole in the wall clubs, you know, uh-huh. You know, back in the early 60s.
Right.
You know, we were young, so he, but by then he was already playing behind, you know, the Isley Brothers, Richard, you know, other bands. But I think that was more in the mid 60s. But we were, and I mean, when they would come to LA, they would play main clubs that became Hole in the Walls later on.
Right.
And, you know, and I guess that was left for us to play, but we did cross paths back then, and of course he looked totally different and played totally different. But one thing that he always kept, and that was his blues signature.
Yeah.
Our blues back then was hip hop of today.
Right, you know? Right.
And a lot of people don't know that, and that's how I connected the blues. It was every time a blues song would play, low false, I don't care who it was, there was a fight. And yeah, man. And so you know, when I would hear the blues, I'd get nervous.
And yeah.
I'd, like, I'd look around, say, okay, who's going to start fighting, you know?
Something's going to go down. Something's
oh, yeah, man, especially in clubs. It'd be some micing or somebody had a gun.
Oh, man.
Cleared the club out, and, you know, just those kind of things, man. And I had to explain that to Eric. And,
right.
And to come to find out that the reason why he liked the blues is because he had pretty much a similar connection where he grew up, which was Newcastle, England, which uh-huh. was, and I don't know now, but mining, a coal mining city, whereas right. they were known as, I guess, what you would call the heathenless town compared to your Liverpools and your Londons, and you know they were the beneath everyone else
uh-huh.
Of England. You know, they were the ghetto of England.
Wow.
So now
speaking of ghetto, I'm glad mm-hmm. you brought the word of ghetto. The World in the Ghetto was released in 1972. That's 46 years ago, and the world is still a ghetto. That was a very profound song, and it's still relevant today. Did you guys know that you were creating music that would stand the test of time?
Well, you know, when Papa D came up with the concept, the concept was really, he was writing a book, and then he started thinking, no, why don't we do like some type of movie document or movie something? But back then it was really called the video, but we didn't know that. But called Ghetto Boy. That's what he was writing the story about. So as we were in Long Beach rehearsing and seeing if we could like come up with something, we'd play, you know, and we'd always have something recording because if you didn't catch any ideas for the first time, then it got lost.
Right.
So trying to repeat something and remember something, we just didn't have that knack. But anyway, in Long Beach, and a lot of these young kids who later on became rappers like Snoop Dogg and all that, they kind of remember when they were kids coming around to hear us practice with this big recording truck in the front. So, and it was there where we wrote The World is a Ghetto. And like I said, we were basing it on Ghetto Boy, Papa D's concept. And, but at the same time, the concept was even more real and came more into focus where we were recording it, which was in Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that was as ghetto as you can get.
Thank you.
Now, as you mentioned, there's a lot of bands and artists and writers that have been inspired by War. Which artist would you say has inspired you the most?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say from Ray Charles to Aretha Franklin, you know, the artists that have so much feeling when they connect a note to the next note.
Right.
Lyrics, unbelievable lyrics. I mean, the feeling that they had was just unbelievable. And of course, I also love Bill Evans' jazz spell. And I also love Tony Bennett, you know.
Yes.
And Tony Bennett and Bill Evans, when they did that album, I said, okay, now they're going to hurt me now. those were my basic inspirations back then. And today, I love everybody. I love all genres of music, man. It's all... it all has its own, it's got its own thing.
So what do you think about today's music, Lonnie?
Oh, I love it. And basically, there is one artist I really, really love. And I think he's just going to be a monster. He's already a monster. But he's going to be bigger and bigger and bigger. To me, he's going to be the next Prince.
And,
I know a lot of people don't agree with me there, but I think so, and that's Bruno Mars.
Yes.
That boy can sing like I've never heard. That boy can sing. He's got real feel if people can open their ears and hear what he's doing. The boy, now, he's very talented.
Lonnie, do you have any new projects or new music about to come out that we don't know? Other than the book? I know we got the book coming.
Yeah, I am working on a solo project. I haven't had a solo project in quite a while, and let me put it this way: I haven't had a solo project that made me feel as good as my very first one, and that's what I'm working on for a possible next year release. Also,
cool.
But it's slow; it's coming slow because I don't want to rush it. You know, I'm an American, not a Russian. So I do not want to rush this music.
I hear you. Yeah. Well, you know, I really cannot thank you enough for this interview. And this music has been a big part of the best times of my life. And I certainly appreciate this music and your sacrifice that you've over all these years. 40, how many years? 46 years?
No, let's say a little over 50 years now.
Oh, my Lord, Lonnie. You know, thank you so much.
You lost 4 or 5, about maybe 5 years.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you hanging in there with the band and keeping this music alive because we need it. We really do. We really need this music.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all do. Like I said, I am a doctor of music like most musicians, and we heal each other. We heal each other with the joy that comes out of it also, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's an honor for me to be a soundtrack of so many people's lives, you know, during so many different years in the past.
Uh-huh.
Including my own.
Absolutely. I certainly appreciate your time and thank you so much for granting the interview and giving me a call today. It's good to hear from you. Good to talk to you. I could talk to you for another hour easily.
Well, we both do the same thing, man. We both we have fans that seek information, whether it's through music or literature or whatever it is. You know, you have the power just as much as I do to inform people.
Well, thank you so much, man, for contributing to all this music to us and man, just being a part of our lives. You know,
thank you for keeping this alive also, keeping the music alive. You know, so like I said, we're partners in this anyway, rather
yes, we are.
Than not.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Lonnie. I sure appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Drink whiskey, punch.
My many thanks to Lonnie Jordan of War, not only for the interview, but also for the years of excellent, memorable music that we all continue to enjoy. Also, thank you to Emily Vey and all my friends at Flying A Media for their assistance and support of the Gumbo Mix. And of course, thank you to all of our listeners who enjoy the Gumbo Mix on 90.7 KSCR and thegumbomix.com. My name is Dee Duane, and thanks again for listening.